8 minutes after seven. Let's find out what it says in today's papers. Now, here's Caroline Murphy.
€30 a week per child for parents returning to work. That, according to the headline on the front of the Irish Times this morning, is one of the plans for next month's budget. We're told it's a return to work dividend. It's aimed at improving incomes for families who move from welfare to work, and those who qualify will be entitled to hold on to the payment for up to 3 years. The payments to defeated councillors, meanwhile, make the lead story in the Irish Independent. Councillors share 12 million payoff after losing seats is the headline. The story says that's the amount which has been paid out to part-time politicians since the local elections in what the piece calls parachute payments. We're told the gratuities are made in recognition of long service and to cushion the blow of life after politics, and that at the higher end, they're worth almost 65,000. There's follow-up inside with a two-page spread laying out individual amounts paid, while Shane Feenan expresses the view that, never mind the mind-boggling formula, voters will be baffled that they exist at all. When you consider, he says, that 20 of our local authorities are technically insolvent, citizens have every right to question why 11.6 million has been spent cushioning the blow for ex-councillors departing office. But what, meanwhile, of that suggestion that some Gardaí are still cushioning the blow for members of the force, friends and family who receive penalty points? That's the subject of the lead story in The Examiner today. Gardaí find fresh excuses to delete penalty points is the headline. Michael Clifford says thousands of suspicious deletions have occurred since the matter first came to public attention over 18 months ago. And he reports also that Sergeant Maurice McCabe has been asked to assist the Professional Standards Unit in a bid to crack down on the abuse. Editorially, the paper is very critical. If the reports are true, says the writer, then our police force has become a sorry, dysfunctional, corrupt and out of control force. We and the great majority of Gardaí cannot afford or tolerate this malpractice or its consequences. An unambiguous and early statement from the Garda representative organisations is essential, says the writer, one that reassures the public that the malpractice described will neither be tolerated nor defended. Otherwise, this morning, Dublin City Council's plans to tackle homelessness make the front of the Times. Prefabs may be used to ease the housing crisis is the headline there, while a man who's taking a case to get out of the prison which has been his home for the past few years makes the lead in the Irish Daily Mail. Wife killer Lillis, I want early release is the headline. In the story, Paul Caffrey reports that following a major court ruling which increased prisoner remission from a quarter to a third, Eamon Lillis is one of a number of inmates going to the High Court looking for immediate release. But finally, in features, The Times has a Price Watch piece on how costs add up as the season of after-school activities kicks off. The Independent has a piece on how mindfulness, the self-help boom of the decade, will now be taught in our schools. Well, lastly, The Examiner is mindful of what's actually there behind all the hype. And so Ed Power forgets the fuss and takes the time to actually listen to the songs. And his conclusion? Songs of Innocence, he says, is perfectly respectable and can stand tall alongside U2's finest output.
Caroline, thank you very much. 12 minutes past seven for the early business news from Brian Finn.
Cathal, thank you. Dutch brewer Heineken looks like it could be subject to more takeover bids after it rejected the advances of London-based brewer SAB Miller. There's growing speculation that Anheuser-Busch InBev, the company that makes Budweiser, is also preparing a bid. Heineken said it had consulted with its majority shareholder, the Heineken family, before rejecting the approach from SAB. The founding Heineken family owns just over 50% of the brewer via Heineken Holding. A further 12% is owned by Mexico's FEMSA. Social Justice Ireland has said the government shouldn't prioritise tax cuts in the budget, but should instead focus on improving social services, reducing poverty and creating jobs. However, in a study on the effects of tax changes, the group says if the government is minded to change tax structures, it should focus on the universal social charge rather than altering tax bans. It says taking a percentage point off the 2% universal social charge, for example, would benefit every worker earning €10,036 to the tune of just over €100 per year. The most unfair option, it says, would be to decrease the 41% tax rate, as this would benefit only those paying tax at that higher rate. Over half of consumers say they feel more positive about their financial status than 12 months ago. That's according to the latest consumer indicator from Retail Ireland. Two-thirds say they're now actively seeking out cheaper ways of living. 4 in 10 of those surveyed said they had delayed buying a big-ticket item over the past 2 years, but just over a quarter of those are likely to splash out on that item in the next 12 months. Any hopes that the European Central Bank might buy up some of our troubled mortgages as part of its recently announced asset-backed securities purchase programme have been dealt a blow. ECB Vice President Vítor Constáncio said at the weekend that the bank would need state guarantees in order to buy lower-ranking debt. France and Germany are known to be against providing state guarantees for such mortgage debt. Finally, on the currencies, the euro buys a $1.296 and 79.8 pence sterling call.
Brian, thank you very much. 14 minutes past 7. In a moment, we'll be talking about two Garda issues that are very much in the news at the moment. First of all, these questions about new allegations about penalty points being cancelled, and also the circumstances in which a child abduction alert was issued after an incident in Wexford on Saturday and then withdrawn when the child involved turned up safe and well. That's after this. You're listening to Morning Ireland at 16 minutes past 7. Senior Gardaí are expected to meet later today with Garda whistleblower Garda Sergeant Maurice McCabe after he made fresh allegations that penalty points are still being cancelled improperly. Joining us, RT's crime correspondent Paul Reynolds. Paul, I think most people would react with just amazement, first of all, that after all that happened, there should be fresh allegations, which the Garda Commissioner, as we know, is taking seriously.
Yeah, that's true, Carl. It's very surprising for a number of reasons. First of all, because the Gardaí have introduced new procedures to ensure that members of the force, superintendents as well, including officers, could not cancel penalty points for friends, family or fellow officers without a paper trail and without very good reason. The new system was implemented in June of this year and means that the authority to cancel penalty points has been taken away from divisional officers in regions, superintendents, inspectors acting up, those sort of those ranks, and centralised to the fixed charge office in Thurles in Tipperary. There are also new manuals and guides to be followed, and there's also a new form to be filled in and regular audits to be undertaken of the process. It's also surprising that this matter has come to light in this fashion as well, because this is essentially the issue which cost 4 people their jobs: the confidential recipient, the Garda Commissioner, the Minister for Justice, and the Secretary General of the Department of Justice. Now, the Garda Commissioner, the interim Garda Commissioner, says she's taking the allegations very, very seriously. At this point in time, though, we don't know the provenance of the allegations. We don't have a figure on how many. We don't know what date. We don't know if they're pre or post June, and that's important, because if they're post June, then they're more serious, because that's when the new system was brought in that was supposed to definitively stop all this. We also don't know the number of Gardaí, and we don't know if any of these complaints or these allegations which have been brought forward in the last 2 weeks are already being investigated by GSOC. There's an investigation underway by the Garda Ombudsman into this, and we don't know if these allegations are already part of GSOC's investigation or whether they're additional allegations.
Just going through some of the information which the This Week programme revealed yesterday, which talking about some areas which we hadn't heard about before. For example, off-duty Gardaí, it is alleged, caught driving their own private vehicles, who subsequently had points cancelled on the basis that they were driving emergency vehicles. Another case, a Garda driving a 15-year-old car who had points cancelled on the basis he was driving an emergency response vehicle. And another case, serving Gardaí, whose addresses are readily available to Gardaí, and those points being cancelled because their addresses are not available. I suppose the other, you've mentioned people losing their jobs, the other issue which makes this very sensitive, in advance of knowing what exactly and when exactly all these allegations relate to, is the fact that there is a job going. There's a new Garda Commissioner is to be appointed, and one of the applicants will be the Commissioner who's now taking these allegations seriously and in charge of investigating them.
Yeah, I mean, Noreen O'Sullivan, the interim Garda Commissioner, has come out with a statement yesterday, a very strong statement, saying that if any infringement of the policies and procedures is found to have taken place, then action will be taken. I mean, the timing certainly is not helpful. Only in the last 2 weeks has the position of Garda Commissioner been advertised, and people are now applying for the job, and the acting commissioner has said that she is applying for that job. Now, she has been in the position of acting commissioner since Martin Callan retired last February. So obviously, any problems or allegations like this, if they're found to have been stood up, and that's the important thing, if they're found to have been stood up, well, then will have a very detrimental impact on her, any application that she might make for the job. However, we must stress that there are two investigations underway. These allegations have not been tested yet. They are very, very serious. They are being taken very seriously, but they have not been tested yet. There are now two investigations underway. The independent one, which has been carried out by the Garda Ombudsman, and there's also an internal Garda investigation into all the allegations that Sergeant McCabe handed over to headquarters, not just the ones that may relate to the time the new system was set up in June. These will be audited by the Garda Professional Standards Unit with all penalty points. So what will be important to see what the outcome of that, we would expect that that investigation will come first, the results of that investigation, and we would expect or would hope that that would be published, and that would very, very quickly clear up this matter to see if there is substance behind these allegations or whether, if they're once they're investigated, whether or not they do stand up.
Now let's turn to the continuing normal Garda business, if you like, and something which could have been very serious, turned out it wasn't in the end, but for a time when this child rescue alert was issued at the weekend over this episode, and it was supposed to be an abduction on the information available on Saturday, and then it turned out it wasn't anything like that on Sunday. What's your understanding of what happened and how it came to be represented as something far more serious than in fact it was?
Yeah, it began Saturday afternoon as a nationwide search for a 15-year-old boy. I mean, the Gardaí were led to believe they had information. They say they had a report which said that this child was abducted at 1:10 in Wexford town in sinister circumstances. They put out a press release at around 7 o'clock Sunday evening, or Saturday evening, which referred to two men wearing balaclavas or ski masks. So they put out a child rescue alert, which is a major issue, whereby information is circulated throughout the motorways, throughout the media. Updates are given every 2 hours, and there's a major search on for a child who's believed to be in danger. 24 hours later, yesterday at lunchtime, that was scaled down to a missing persons inquiry when the Gardaí, following further investigation, became satisfied that the child, who's 15 years of age, went with the two men of his own free will. And then late yesterday afternoon, they got information that he was in a house in Sligo and they found him safe and well. Now, did the Gardaí overreact? Well, they say no. They say they acted in good faith. They say they had information that a child was abducted. They had some corroborating facts. For example, when they spoke to other witnesses, the detail in relation to the car that the child went away in was corroborated. So they continued their investigation. But after 5 hours later, at around 6 or 7 o'clock on Saturday evening, they decided to act. They felt they couldn't take the risk of any serious harm coming to the child that he had been missing for that 5 hours. And they decided to issue the child rescue alert. Now, they say they believe they were correct because the information they had led them to believe that there was a serious and immediate risk to the life of a child, and that therefore it met the criteria for such an alert. As the investigation continued, however, and more information emerged, they reassessed the situation and cancelled it. Now, it's the fifth time that the Gardaí have launched a child rescue alert. In every other case, a child was in grave danger, and in some of those cases, children have died. In this case, the Gardaí say they couldn't take the risk of that happening again, and that's why they issued the alert. However, they're now saying that they're reviewing this incident, they're looking at the reports they received, and if anyone is suspected of having deliberately provided false or misleading information, then they could face criminal charges.
Right, well, thank goodness it ended well. I think one thing they might, because I saw those signs myself on the motorways and I was driving back to Dublin on Saturday night, a CRI alert. I would suggest that most of us haven't a clue what a CRI alert. I mean, those in the business, Gardaí obviously, and professionals know it's a child rescue alert, but I think most lay people wouldn't. Anyway, Paul Reynolds, thank you very much for talking to us. 7:20.
Let's turn to politics now. A Red Sea poll in yesterday's Sunday Business Post recorded a 1-point increase for the Labour Party, now an 8%, sure to be a talking point amongst members of the parliamentary party as they gather here at White's Hotel in Wexford today. Fianna Fáil is unchanged on 18, Sinn Féin up 1 to 23, Fine Gael records the biggest increase, up 3 to 28%. All numbers, but what do they mean? Micheál Lehan of our political staff is with me now. Good morning to you, Micheál. These figures, who should be most concerned by them?
Well, I think there are two parties who will look at them and wonder. The first would be the Labour Party, who, of course, there was a poll during the summer who showed their support at 14%. This, of course, the tracking poll that Red Sea do with the Sunday Business Post that looks on an ongoing basis at the standing of the parties. So perhaps it's more significant, 1% up since a new leader took over in July, when most of the news coming from the government side, from their point of view, has been good. I think people in Labour who are beginning to speak about the possibility of 10% coming back into sight at the next election, viewing that as the floor and perhaps rising slightly above it, that the hope among many privately when they speak about their chances in the next election, if they're only at 8% now, yes, they can say that the trend, the downward trend, has stopped, but nonetheless the bounce from the new leader certainly hasn't happened. I think for Fianna Fáil too, there are worries there. 18%, that's just above where they were in the last general election. Again, there was plenty bad news for the government in the first 6 months of the year, particularly around the justice issues. Fianna Fáil, you would have thought, could have made more progress there. There's criticism too, of course, coming from the old guard within that party, people like Mary Hanafin. So I think even though they face into a by-election with a realistic chance of winning it, perhaps the pressure to do that would be even greater now. But in fairness to the party, they can point to local elections where they got 25%, and politicians, when the results suit, like to say that's the only poll that matters. But of course, that is a significant result. But this particular poll showing would put some worry in the party, you feel, even though they mightn't admit it. I suppose they're the two big worrying points that you could look at. On the other side, Fine Gael rising to 28%, making them the biggest party. Many backbenchers in that party who know now they will never be junior ministers, who know now they will never be committee chairs, are already beginning to look to the next election. At 28%, some of them will feel that probably isn't enough, given that we're going to see a reduction in the number of TDs anyway, from 166 down to 158. They've always said that about 30% will be necessary to bring back that huge swathe of new TDs that were elected the last time. But nonetheless,
the issue of independence, Micheál, performing relatively well and still quite a strong body.
Yeah, at 23%, but down 5 points, which is a big drop. They had been moving very high there. That's the independents and other smaller parties. But clearly, the people who feel unhappy with the decisions taken by the government have gone to the independents. Where else have they gone? Well, clearly, if you look at the rise that Sinn Féin has enjoyed in these polls for several months now, they're up to 23%. That makes them the second biggest party on this standing and on this analysis. And they're up 1 point again in this poll, which kind of consolidates where they're at, a significant result. But if you look at the sentiment among voters too, as to how they feel about what's happened, that seems particularly interesting, with 61% of people saying that the country is generally on the right track. Almost 6 out of 10 voters saying the government's austerity policies were necessary. Of course, 4 out of 10, there's 40% of people think they weren't. And then also that very interesting question that could potentially inform thinking in government, you feel, about should any extra resources be used to fund public services or else cut tax. 6 out of 10 again saying that it should go towards public services. An interesting finding.
All right, Micheál Lehan, thank you. We'll be talking to Tánaiste to John Burton about those issues of sentiment later in the programme, and we'll also be hearing from Labour TDs and senators before 8 o'clock. It's almost 28 minutes after 7.
Rare recordings of interviews with volunteers who fought in the 1916 Rising and in the War of Independence are to be made available to the public for the first time. A unique archive from a library in Armagh contains interviews with over 100 people who witnessed the historic events, including a recording made nearly 50 years ago with the widow of Thomas Clark, one of the 1916 leaders. Brendan Wright of our Northern staff has more.
British soldiers marching through the streets of Dublin during the Easter Rising of 1916, one of the seismic events of the time which shaped the island we live in today. First-hand accounts of the Rising, the War of Independence, the Civil War and Partition are very rare, but the Cardinal Tomás Ophé Library in Armagh is restoring interviews recorded 50 years ago with veterans of those historic days. Father Louis O'Kane, a priest in the Armagh Diocese in the 1960s, interviewed men and women, mostly from the north, who took part in the struggle for Irish independence. With the help of funding from the Department of Foreign Affairs and the British National Lottery, the original tapes are being restored. The man in charge of the project is the director of the library, Roddy Hegarty.
It is a very important archive, and the library and archive in Armagh is very proud to actually be in possession of it, but particularly so at this time. We're now living through a decade where we're commemorating these various centenaries, and this is part of an untold story in many ways. It allows us to open up a new narrative. There are very many competing narratives out there, and very often the voices of Northern nationalism during that period up to 1922 are often lost in the mist of history.
One of the recordings is a very rare interview with Kathleen O'Clery, the widow of Thomas Clarke, a signatory of the proclamation and a leader of the 1916 Rising, who was executed after it. She recalled how when she and her husband were living in America in the early part of the 20th century, how Tom Clarke had predicted the First World War would happen, and he saw how England's difficulty because of that conflict could become Ireland's opportunity.
Well, it took him months for to talk me into agreeing to come home.
Yes.
So once I surrendered then, I went into it wholeheartedly with him.
I know.
Even though I realised I couldn't see. I'm a practical person in ways.
Women are more practical.
Yes, I couldn't ever see what the small might that we could throw up against the immense might of the emperor.
Of that time, you see. Yeah.
But he said, but when they'll be at war, we can have the opportunity of that.
In her interview, Kathleen O'Clery was also critical of the actions of some of the others involved in 1916, including Roger Casement and Owen McNeill.
What he didn't count on was that other forces, supposed to be national, came in and changed their plans in every way. McNeill's treachery in sending countermanding orders, and Casement coming home. Now, Casement went to Germany on his own bat.
Yes.
He wasn't asked to go.
Yes.
He wasn't long enough in the movement in Ireland to really know what the relationship between Germany and us were at the time.
Yes.
He didn't approach the revolutionary element to know what they were.
Yes.
And he went to Germany and announced himself from Ireland.
Yes, an ambassador.
Ambassador. When he was nothing of the kind.
Roddy Hegarty says the tapes are important because they tell the story of volunteers from the north who, after the conflict was over, returned home across the border and so didn't benefit from an utterly changed Ireland.
Many of these men simply had returned to their own families, to their own communities, and were living out their lives into old age without ever having the opportunity to tell the story of the role that they had played during that time. And Father O'Kane's efforts really have left us with a superb source, a rich source, for both academics and researchers, but also for the general public. It's a story, as I say, that has remained largely untold.
And that's Roddy Hegarty in Armagh, and an archive of voices from the past, which is truly wonderful by the sound of it, and is going to be fascinating for many people. That was Brendan Wright reporting at 7:31. 22 minutes to 8. Pádraic Lodge joined us with the sport on a red letter day in Croke Park.
It certainly was, Colin. Good morning to you. Cork celebrating overnight and probably still celebrating this morning. They're the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Champions for the first time since 2009. It's a 25th title in total for them, and it was quite a remarkable comeback from them. They turned things around in the second half. They went in at half-time 5 points down against Kilkenny, but they got goals in the second half from Jenny O'Leary and Angela Walsh. So that made it 2-12 to 1-9, the final score. And heartbreak again for Kilkenny, the second year in a row that they've lost the final. And the honour of lifting the O'Duffy Cup went to the Cork captain, Anna Geary from Milford.
It was a very defensive game in the first 30 minutes, but both defences dominating, and I suppose we never really got it freed up. So we came out at half time, we knew we were coming from behind, and we knew that if we kept up the defensive strategy, it wasn't going to work. We didn't play to our game plan in the first half. We reverted back to in the second half. We were attacking the ball right from the full back line all the way up along. We attacked the ball, and that was, you know, that's what it came down to. It's about fighting for every score and believing that you were good enough to get the score, and thankfully we came out on top in the end.
Crucial goals, Jennifer O'Leary and Angela Walsh right at the death.
Yeah, but that just shows the type of player that we have. They never say die, and that's the attitude that you need to win in All-Ireland. I couldn't tell you the score at the very end, because all I was worried about was where we were in front. I didn't care if it was by 10 points or 1 point. That's what counts, and the girls knew they needed to get in top front. We were doing our best down the back to hold them out, and the girls really produced in the second half when it counted, and that's why I get to hold this precious cup in my hands.
It's a beautiful cup, and it was a great speech. Probably one of the longest here at Croke Park.
Well, do you know what? so often you hear the men and they give tremendous speeches and they give tremendous praise and credit to people that deserve it. I've been waiting a long time to walk up the steps of the Hogan stand, and there were so many people that needed to be thanked. There was a lot of people that didn't get an opportunity to thank. So when I had that 10 minutes, I said, why waste it? Why look back afterwards and say, oh, I should have said this or I should thank this person? That was my moment, and I was intending to make it absolutely count to the very last second.
That's Anna Geary there speaking to Pat McAuliffe. Limerick, managed by Joe Quaid, were crowned intermediate champions with a 112-10 victory over Kilkenny, while Down recovered from the disappointment of two recent final defeats to win the Premier Junior title, beating Laois 112-18. American Billy Horschel recorded the most significant victory of his career at the Tour Championship in Atlanta, winning by 3 shots. Rory McIlroy fell out of contention with a double bogey at the 6th hole and 3 bogeys in a row later in the round. He tied for 2nd place with American Jim Furyk. We can get more details on last night's final round from BBC golf correspondent Ian Carter.
Exhaustion caught up with McIlroy, who couldn't summon the final round he needed to end the PGA Tour season in fitting style. He faded around the turn, having double bogeyed the 6th, and only 3 birdies in the last 4 holes earned him a share of 2nd place with Jim Furyk. McIlroy won't look at his clubs again until he starts to prepare for the Ryder Cup. Ironically, that's not a concern of champion Billy Horschel. He's $11.4 million richer, but the form that earned him this bumper check came too late to earn a US Ryder Cup place.
England's Paul Casey was a 1-stroke winner of the European Tour event in the Netherlands. Padraig Harrington and Shane Lowry finished in a share of 28th place, 9 shots behind the winner. Avondale United from the Munster Senior League held Finn Harps to a 1-1 draw in their FAI Cup quarter-final in Cork. The replay will take place in Ballybofey on Wednesday night. Tonight at Oriel Park, it's the quarter-final replay between Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers. Manchester United defeated QPR 4-0 at Old Trafford in the English Premier League for their first win since Dutchman Louis van Gaal took charge at Old Trafford. New signing Angel Di Maria scored the first goal, with Wayne Rooney, Ander Herrera and Juan Mata also on the score sheet. The final day of the inaugural Champions Weekend at the Curragh saw British success in the Irish St Ledger as Brown Panther gave trainer Tom Dascombe and jockey Richard Kingscote their first classic success. He beat the favourite Leading Light by 6.5 lengths. The winning horse is owned by retired soccer player Michael Owen.
It was very special, yeah. It was obviously his first Group 1 win. He was very impressive. He's obviously the apple of my eye, as everyone knows, and he was pretty spectacular out there today. So yeah, we're obviously over the moon. I must admit, when he was so close to the pacemaker still with only 0.5 mile to go, I was thinking maybe he's going a yard too quick, but he's a relentless galloper. He's obviously quickened again. Anything come to him, but nothing came to him. I was just waiting for everything to come to him, but he just kept galloping, and he's a superstar.
Will he take a chance at the Melbourne Cup?
I don't think so, no. We did the Melbourne Cup last year. We're probably looking at the Champions Series stay-in race now, so that's probably next on the agenda.
That's Michael Owen speaking to Brendan McCardle. Aidan and Joseph O'Brien teamed up to win the National Stakes with the odds-on favourite Glen Eagles, while the favourite was also first home in the Moyglare Stud Stakes, with a Roger Varian-trained Cursory Glance taking the honours. Yesterday's attendance at the Curragh was over 10,000, which was double last year's figure. On the opening day of the Harvest Festival in Estoril, Lord Ben was an emphatic winner of the Kerry Group Handicap Chase for rider Johnny Burke and trainer Henry de Bromhead. Local favourite Alberto Contador wrapped up his third Tour of Spain triumph when he comfortably held on to his overall lead in the final stage time trial. Contador, who rides for the Tinko Saxo team, also won the Vuelta in 2008 and 2012. Dan Martin ended the event in 7th, with Philip Deignan 39th. There was defeat for Belfast's Mark Allen in the final of the Shanghai Masters snooker. He lost out to Stuart Bingham of England, who won by 10 frames to 3. And in show jumping, Wexford's Bertram Allen picked up valuable world ranking points when he finished 3rd in last night's jump off class at Lausanne in Switzerland. And that's the sport, Fran.
Porrick, thank you. 7:43 now. Well, later this morning, in this very room where we're broadcasting from, members of the Labour Party, the Parliamentary Party, will sit around the table and discuss the next Dáil term. The staff here at White's Hotel have been working hard laying out the conference room, 50 seats at long tables, all facing one another. Frank Talking will follow. The party will be discussing how they can assert themselves more in government, how it can avoid the mistakes of its term in office so far, and try and win back the voters who've turned their back on them. They'll come here to White's Hotel in Wexford Town for what's now called the Think-In.
Think-ins are something that I'm not a great believer in, to be honest with you.
Well, the Think-In is often criticised, and Longford West Meath TD Willie Penrose is as frank as ever.
I've never been a great subscriber to them, to be very honest with you. I think they're somewhat inflated in terms of what to achieve. But it allows people maybe to get together and that. But, you know, the weekly parliamentary meeting has been very successful in that regard over the years. So I'm kind of traditionalist in that. It's only, play acting before the real game begins.
If today is play acting, as Willie Penrose says, it's play acting about something very serious indeed, the future of the Labour Party, a party that's now being led by someone the Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams called last week an architect of austerity. That criticism is being brushed aside by many in Labour.
They always say what they're against, but they never say what they're for, nor they never say how they're going to.
Never mind that, people are voting for them.
Well, I mean, of course they are, because when you tell people what they want to hear and you resonate with everything that's anti, it's very easy to be always at the top of the tree. But I mean, I think that people are moving away from that now. I mean, I believe myself that as it becomes more critical and Sinn Féin has to face over the next 18 months as to what if they're going to be in a position of influence and to achieve the numbers that stack up, they will have to make decisions about what who they may well go into government with.
Sinn Féin may be criticising the new Labour leader, but the polls like her. In Lucan, Labour TD Joanna Tuffy says Labour hostility on the streets is easing.
The fact that we've had a change of leader has given us a boost, and this Joan, you know, is very competent, and she is, she's a woman leader, so that brings a new dimension to it as well. So I do think it's helped give us a lift, but I don't think it's the only reason we've got a lift. And I think, you know, there are other reasons. I think the electorate, I feel here now on the ground that the electorate maybe are a bit more sympathetic, whereas I did, there was a lot of hostility I picked up obviously on the ground during the local elections. I think that's kind of dissipated to a certain extent, maybe because for different reasons, because we have got such a hammering, and then secondly, you know, there's more positive news out there. There's less, like, just in the lead up to the election, there was just relentless anti-Labour campaigning from all fronts.
That anti-Labour campaigning has focused minds like that of Senator Lorraine Higgins.
We need now to formulate decisions when it comes to the upcoming budget to make sure that our ministers are pushing our agenda in government to ensure that we now look at a position where we can actually give back something to the people who have made sacrifices over the last number of years. Low and middle income earners, people with families, people who are retired, they have made huge sacrifices, and now that we see the exchequer figures being so healthy in such a short period of time, you know, it's time now to look at how we can reward them for those sacrifices that they have made.
But does the Dáil hopeful from Galway East have specific measures in mind and how that could be achieved?
I would feel very strongly about a cut in the universal social charge. We need to as well reward the elderly who have made sacrifices over the last number of years but also have contributed handsomely to the health of this economy over a long period of time. But also, you know, we really need to look at creating a social Ireland where there is a situation where people who are getting jobs are getting good jobs that pay a living wage and that they can have a standard of living. Not low paid jobs, but jobs that pay a living wage.
From Galway East to Ballymun now, where Labour TD John Lyons is echoing that view, he's keen to start the voter win back.
I think the biggest thing that we need to concentrate on as a party is restoring the faith in those thousands of people who came out at the last general election and put their faith in the Labour Party. And yes, I think a lot of them are very angry with us at the moment, and rightfully so, because they've seen, you know, they've had to walk through the pain of what's happened over the last years. But as we said at the general election, that we would get this country out of the bailout, and we would restore our sovereignty, and we would grow our economy to make it a more fair and balanced society. And now we're into the second half of that. And I think the biggest challenge is that we need to ensure that people realise their vote for Labour last time was not in vain, and that we need to be able to show that by the next general election.
Well, of course, winning elections is about winning back voters, and if that's what needs to happen, perhaps examining what went wrong is important. Joanna Tuffy, though, says convincing people that what was promised will be delivered is important.
It was a little too fast, too much, you know, for people. There is that aspect of it, you know. It was very much a short, sharp shock type of policy of the government. The message, I think, for the upcoming budget is that the measures that will cause hardship are coming to an end. But I don't think we should in any way give the impression that, you know, the good times are on the way back, because we don't need to get, what we don't want to do is to make the mistakes of the past.
Labour TD Joanna Tuffy, amongst others, speaking to me over the weekend. We'll be putting some of those points raised to Tánaiste to Joan Burton a little later in the programme. It's 7:49.
Let's turn to this report on stroke, which has been issued by the ESRI today, in which two points stand out. One is that one in five of us will suffer a stroke during our lifetimes. And the other, well, I'll just quote from the report itself. It says, the introduction of early supported discharge for stroke patients in Ireland could improve outcomes and reduce overall costs. We're joined by the lead author of the report, Dr. Maeve Ann Wren of the ESRI. Good morning and welcome.
Morning.
First of all, so we know what we're talking about. Early supported discharge for stroke patients means what?
What it means is that patients with mild or moderate disability after stroke would get home faster from hospital. On average, we'd say 8 days faster. And instead of having the bulk of their rehabilitation in hospital, they'd have it at home. And this could be physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech and language therapy. It would require more nursing support, more home help support, probably a role for social workers and certainly also a role for doctors. But the international experience has been, and there have been a lot of trials of this now internationally, that the outcomes are much better, that people who have early supported discharge at home are much less likely to end up eventually going into long-term care, for instance, that they're likely to become much more independent in their daily lives. And the reason for this appears to be that if you have rehabilitation in the home setting, that is where you're going to be, and the rehabilitation is geared towards getting you up and running at home.
How much of this is going on in Ireland now?
There, some hospitals have implemented pilot programmes and they've had good results from them. But the looking at, say, the proportion of patients that have been involved, for instance, the Mater and the HSE North Dublin region have been leaders in this, and we analysed in detail their programme. They managed to include 13% of patients in the matter. They reckoned they could have included 17%. In fact, internationally, it looks like you really could include 44%. And the reason why they didn't is because there wasn't adequate support. Actually, particularly not enough community nursing. It's not that the nurses there didn't support it. Of course, they did. But we simply don't have enough nurses and therapists in the community in Ireland.
Anybody who has seen the kind of rehabilitation that goes on knows how wonderful it is. I mean, I've seen, for example, the Royal Hospital in Donnybrook.
Yes.
Centre,
yes.
You start with helping someone to sit up in bed, then get out of bed, and
yes,
so on.
Yes.
So it's terrific. Now, it's obviously it should be done, and it's obviously cheaper to do it outside of hospital. But just tell us about the mathematics.
What we've estimated that if you say, I mean, internationally, the trials have said that you could save on average between 7 and 13 days in hospital, and they say that really a good early supported discharge program should save 8, and that's conservative if you consider that 13 has been saved. And we've calculated that if you saved 8 days for each of the roughly 3,000 patients on average each year who could benefit from this, that would be 24,000 days, bed days annually, the equivalent of 67 acute beds annually. And that would save about, on the average stroke bed day cost, about €12 million. Now, depending on how highly resourced the early supported discharge programme is, and we've looked at a few different models for that, that could cost between €5 and €7 million, €2 and €7 million, and give you potential savings.
So you could do it better, do
yes.
it out of hospital and save
yes.
money.
How yes,
much?
You could.
The
potential savings overall, are between €2 and €7 million
right.
annually.
So, and if Leo Varadkar is listening to us and if he wants to do this, it would take how long realistically to get this kind of thing going?
Well, you would need to get the community staffing there in the community. And to the very important message, I think, is that you don't go for the reduced length of stay till you have the resources there. You have to build up the resources in the community. And I think there's a wider implication from this finding, because it's not only stroke survivors who would benefit from better community rehabilitation. There are people with many other conditions in the community who would benefit from building up community services in this way.
Maeve Ann Wren of the SRI, thank you very much. 7:07.
You're welcome back. You're with Morning Ireland. Time for business now. Here's Brian Finn.
Fran, thank you. Dutch brewer Heineken has rejected a takeover bid from SAB Miller. It didn't reveal the offer price. Anheuser Busch InBev, the brewers of Budweiser, has also said to be considering a bid for Heineken. Consumers here are generally optimistic about their prospects, but remain cautious. That's the broad conclusion of a study of consumer shopping habits carried out by Retail Ireland. Its director, Stephen Lynham, is here. And Stephen, this broadly reflects what we're seeing in other studies and perhaps in indicators from the CSO. Shoppers are getting back out there again, but they're looking for value.
Yes, this survey shows that about just over half of shoppers are more optimistic about their own financial status, and that while 40% of them have delayed purchasing a big ticket item like a car, furniture, or a big electrical item, a quarter of shoppers intend to make that purchase in the next 12 months. So that's positive for retail, it's positive for the economy.
But the car buyers, they're obviously getting out there again, because we see from the car figures right up to August that they're well up on last year.
Yes, I would say though that the recovery is still in its infancy and it is patchy. There are other sectors of the economy, of the retail economy, food and fuel and so on, which have seen growth figures that are a lot less impressive. And then there are other sectors of retail which have yet to see any recovery at all. So we would point out that there's still a lot to be done there.
That search for value that we see consumers undertaking at the moment, is that typical of what we'd see at the end of a recession? Would we expect them to see them opening the purse strings again as money begins to flow back into the coffers?
Well, we think on things like groceries, consumer behaviour has changed for the long term now. Most people have said that they buy more on special offer. Half of them say that they will use their loyalty card more. Two-thirds say that they purchase more own brand and private label goods. So the recession has changed things completely for many people, and they won't be going back once the economy recovers.
We have a budget in a few weeks' time. What does Michael Noonan need to do to get to convince more consumers out into the shopping place again?
Well, there seems to be near universal approval of tax reform, so we're very much looking forward to seeing consumers being given a little bit more in their pocket, so they go out, spend that in the domestic economy, create jobs and help get the economy going again.
Stephen Lynham of Retail Ireland, thank you very much indeed. Just finally, Colin, on the currencies this morning, the euro buys $1.29.5 and 79.8 pence sterling.
Thank you very much, Brian. Time for the weather from Jean Byrne of Meta. Morning, Jean.
Good morning. Well, another very mild and mostly dry week ahead with some sunshine at times, but there's a possibility of a few light showers. The main concern, though, is the risk of dense fog at night. And we have a lot of fog at the moment with the risk of some dense pockets, but it will clear in the morning and the day will be mainly dry with sunny spells developing. However, a few isolated light showers may develop also. Very mild with maximum temperatures of 16 to 20 degrees. In a light to moderate easterly breeze. Tonight, again mostly dry with clear spells but with a good deal of cloud. It'll be misty in many areas with fog as the winds slacken, and again the fog could be dense in some parts with hazardous driving conditions. A few spots of drizzle are possible also, mainly in the north and northeast. Minimum temperatures 5 to 10 degrees. Tomorrow, Tuesday, again, any patchy fog or drizzle will clear in the morning, giving way to another mostly dry day with sunny spells, but a few scattered light showers may occur. Maximum temperatures tomorrow, 17 to 21 degrees, with moderate easterly winds. Wednesday should be dry everywhere with some sunshine and highest temperatures of 17 to 21, coolest on eastern coasts with moderate east to northeast winds. And again, there's a risk of fog overnight. Thursday and Friday, very little change, remaining dry in most areas with sunny spells, but a few scattered showers may occur. And there may be some drizzle along southern coasts. And at the moment, it looks as if there could even be some rain developing in parts of Munster on Friday. A little warmer through Thursday and Friday with temperatures 17 to 22 degrees and light to moderate east to northeast winds, becoming light and variable on Friday. And for the weekend, it looks like being mostly dry with sunny spells and temperatures of 17 to 21. And finally, today's weather again, a mostly dry day with sunny spells developing and highest temperatures of 17 to 20 degrees in light to moderate easterly winds. That's all from us at Met Éireann for the moment. Good morning.
It's nearly 8 o'clock on RTE Radio 1. Time to check out Toyota, the most reliable car in Germany in a survey of 8 million cars. Toyota, the best built cars in the world.